You're listening to Extra Time, driven by Continental.
How are you feeling after that, Matt?
I feel a lot better than Bob.
Extra Time is exactly how I find out what's going on in the MLS.
Get lost. Get lost.
Maybe this podcast has influenced me a little bit as well.
You guys are the experts. You'll probably have to analyze that.
Everybody up here, every single day, goes into the office, into the laboratory, to try to cook up some great stuff for you guys.
That's why he's here!
From Brooklyn, New York, you are listening to Extra Time, driven by Continental, from my bedroom in Bed-Stuy. I'm Andrew Wiebe with my partners in soccer, David Goss, Kaylin Carr, Matt Doyle. What a beautiful day it is to be inside, guys, where we're all supposed to be. I have a window open. I can see outdoors, but I can't see all of your faces. I miss you. I miss all of you, except for you, Noah.
Thank you. Appreciate that.
My family's been watching the show because they have nothing else to do now. And they brought up that Doyle grew a beard and they're annoyed because he stole the few things I have.
Huh.
That's how that's interesting. Your family watches to see what other people may or may not have borrowed from your grooming.
No, they watched. They watched because they literally have nothing else to do.
Wow.
Let's start there. And then let's go down the list of things. First, they told me I had to change my camera view, change this on the set. And then my dad told me, because my mom was on the phone with a family member, and then she comes on and she reiterates what they've already told me. So now I know twice that my camera.
So why don't you just go clean shaven then?
Yeah, you got to switch it up.
I've been clean shaven since I was 19 years old. I look like a naked mole rat if I do. It's not a look for me.
And on that note, Kaylin, I appreciate your wood grain in the background. Whatever basement you're in is absolutely beautiful in a 1970s way. Got a big show for you right now. Nat Bortruz is coming up as we do Mount Rushmore's for Atlanta United, Real Salt Lake, and the Vancouver Whitecaps. But before we get there, I mean, it's the elephant in the room that's not really hiding anywhere. We all see it. We all experiencing it. COVID-19, I miss normal. I miss people. I miss soccer. As I said, I miss doing this with you guys. But we also know that perhaps our listeners, perhaps people we know, our friends and family, many are missing so much more than that. Friends or family members who are affected by this virus, people's own health may be up and down, their income to support themselves and their families. We know that this is big and real and scary at times. So all of us are affected. All of our lives have been thrown into some form of disarray. But I just want to, before we get going, remind people why we're doing this. 1 million cases and deaths nearing 50,000 worldwide from COVID-19 as of this Thursday. Yesterday from the CDC, just in the U.S., 186,000 cases in all 50 states, by the way. More than 3,600 deaths. Projections, we've all seen them, between 100 and 240,000 could be affected and killed by this virus. That's sobering, man. That makes you stand back. That makes you think about the fun that we're going to have on this show and give you just a little bit of pause. But the reason that we're doing this, why we're saying this, to save lives, do what you have to do. Social distance, stay home, do the 6 feet thing. If you're feeling sick, stay there. And I just want to reiterate one final time before we get into the soccer. Thank you so much to all the doctors, the nurses, the paramedics, literally anyone in hospitals, in doctor's offices, anyone in the healthcare industry going to work, risking their own health to help us, to help others, to save lives. We cannot say thank you enough to you. So we're thinking about you as we do this, as we try to find some normalcy in these weird times. And we're thinking about every single one of our listeners
and
out
there. Let's just add this, like to people who, you know, working at grocery stores, delivering food to, the janitors, garbage men, people who cannot stop working. Thank you so much for going out there, doing your job, staying safe, trying to hold society's fabric together as much as possible. Thank you to all of you. You all are essential. And hopefully nobody ever forgets that after what we're going through all together collectively in 2020.
Yep. Hope this is a diversion for you out there as it is for us. It's something to take our minds off what's going on outside of our respective homes here. Another diversion for you, the call-up's still doing their thing. Their Monday guest is going to be Brad Guzan. They also had Will Trapp this week, and he
could sing.
Has the voice of a songbird.
Sing.
Yeah, I mean, it's incredible. It's incredible.
Are you surprised? Come on. Will Trapp is a perfect human being, that guy.
That's true.
He can do it all. Yeah, every note, every pitch perfect.
honestly, my kid demands a song at bedtime from me, and I'm just trying to emulate Will Trapp now and falling short every single night. He doesn't I know.
What's
I do
the
not
kid's
measure
favorite
up.
Song at this point?
It's Every Night I Sing What
That's
a Wonderful
good
World.
One. That's a good so, one. I thought
yeah,
you were
man, trying
do
to
do some, you know, We're Here for RSL, but.
I'm surprised I didn't see you in Gal Gadot's video.
Wow, that is some serious shade. I'm offended. I'm absolutely offended. So download the call up.
No, just because you're A-list.
Yeah, man.
See, that's you're mocking me. I know you're mocking me, all right? This is the same thing my wife does. Go to MLSsoccer.com. Nick Furshaw's Project 40 long form is there as well. I read anything and everything Nick Furshaw writes. This is an incredible piece of reporting. Go check it out. It's a piece of MLS history that you want to see. And then another reminder, MLS Classics Remix, 2018 MLS Cup Atlanta against the Portland Timbers on Friday, 4 p.m. Eastern on YouTube, Facebook, MLSsoccer.com, the MLS app. It's going to be myself, Jillian Sakovitz, who you know from her coverage of that club from the very jump, Greg Garza, and Jeremy Obobese will be on that stream. So check that one out. Get in the comments. Let us know what you think. Before we get to Atlanta United and their Mount Rushmore, Nathan in Trenton says he just listened to some of our shows. He's going through. He did not know. But my family struggled with COVID-19, and he says he wishes everybody health and safety, that ETR has been a part of his life since 2010. It feels like family. I hope everyone is doing better, that everyone involved is staying healthy. My wife is good. On the other side, we hope all of your family and friends are in that same boat. And then Anonymous, aka producer Anders, I think, suggested Rico Fjord Wiebe as the name of my child, and I do like Fjord better
but
than River.
But I thought
River,
you had a, like a broad... policy of no bodies of water in the yet.
I do.
So, non-starter.
I do, but she gets the middle name. Mm-hmm. She gets the middle name, so if we can, she can sneak that one in there.
I've got a new one to add in because I did an online trivia the other day. A large arched coastline is called a bite. So that's a good one. Rico Bite Wiebe.
Yeah, definitely.
But it's spelled GHT, not...
A real contender there, Dave. Yeah.
I'll hit up Mindy. Me and Mindy will take this offline.
Okay, fine. We'll circle back on this later. 401-206-0MLS, extratime@mlssoccer.com. If you have any thoughts about literally anything during these times, hit us up. And if you have a suggestion, an MLS-inspired moniker for my child, put it in there and maybe I'll sneak it in with Mindy. And if Extra Time names my second child, I mean, that'll be a legendary moment.
What if you just went acronym for team is the star, a la RSL?
No. We'll get to that with Nat Bortress here in a second. All right, let's get into it. We'll start with James Chelminski in Rockaway, New York. He says his Mount Rushmore for the LA Galaxy is four Landons. And if that's not allowed, Landon Keane, Cienfuegos, and Arena. Arena's not allowed, James Chelminski. And then he threw out LAFC's Kubo, Chelis, Guzan, and empty
that's
trophy.
That's some
kick.
Good shade right nice. There. I like that.
Class.
Ante Razov maybe has to be in there. Sasha Kleshchen. Of course, these are Chivas USA jokes.
You guys, the Bob Bradley Chivas USA teams were really fun to watch. And
so
the
were the
series
Preki
they
teams.
Had against the Galaxy.
Wait, without... I guess played for Chivas USA for a match, so I'd like to be considered at least.
That seals it. We are doing a Chivas USA Mount Rushmore, so send us all your...
In the days that you could guest play in MLS, that would... Wow.
A member of the Chicago Fire, now suiting up for Chivas USA, Kalen Carr.
That's when MLS was a youth soccer tournament over Labor Day weekend.
Like, hey, buddy, get over here.
Oh, boy.
I wish I would have kept a kit. That's one of my biggest regrets. Man.
Too bad. Man. Too bad. Yeah. All right. No regrets. Let's do this. Atlanta United's Mount Rushmore. You know their history here. It's not particularly long. Three seasons, three trophies. I think you have some locks here, and you just start with Joseph Martinez. He has to be the first name on the Mount Rushmore. And then his running mate is right there, Miguel Miron, as well, even though he did move on. But that's part of this club's history. It's part of what makes him special. It's the first in what they hope is many of these big money sales. Of course, Almiron to Newcastle United. He got Cup in 2018, Open Cup in 19, as well as Campeones Cup. Get us started, Doyle. Outside of Joseph Martinez and Miguel Miron, who has a shout? Who do you think belongs on this Mount Rushmore?
It's really tough because it just, like you said, they haven't been around long enough. But really, from day one, Julian Gressel was awesome. And you could say he was, at no point was he actually the best player on the team, which is fine because his teammates were guys like Joseph Martinez and Miguel Almiron. Still pretty effective player. I think just in terms of the breadth and depth of the contribution over the course of 3 years, Gressel deserves to be there.
Also in the community. I mean, what he did in that community, he just became immediately sort of part of the fabric and everybody embraced him. Is this related to the Walker Zimmerman snub for LAFC? Can you make a case that he shouldn't be there because he's no longer there? Or is it a simple fact of...
No, like, there Julian is Dressel- no longer there.
Explain. Like,
no one's there anymore. That's this entire list. No, almost no one's there, right? Tito Viabla's not there.
Parkhurst.
Nagby's not there anymore. LGP, yep. I think, would be a pretty obvious one, but he's not there anymore. And it ended Brad a bit Guzan? Awkwardly. So what?
Brad Guzan.
I think that probably is Brad Guzan's best argument for being on the list is that he's, although it took him a few months to get there, he's been there and he is still there. And I think is a vocal leader for the team, but I don't think Gressel being traded now changes the fact that he played four positions for them in key moments, in key games. I think he's a face of the team for a lot of fans in that city and around the league. I think a lot of people still mentally associate him with Atlanta United. And so I agree with Doyle. I think he's my number three on this list.
Guzan, you mentioned though, Kalen, it feels to me like it's hard to put as the third guy in stone, someone who's not there. And I acknowledge all of Gressel's contributions, everything he did on the field and off it. But it feels weird to me when you're sort of immortalizing players in your past to choose somebody who's not on the team before somebody who is on the team. I mean, at least Michael Parkhurst, he walked away, you know, like he retired. He ended his career with Atlanta United.
Yeah, I could see if there was, if you didn't have the depth of or choices where you'd say, okay, this, if there weren't other options, I could see you taking Gressel. And I think he's, you know, fully deserves to be mentioned in that list. But I think of guys like, yeah, you mentioned Michael Parkhurst. I think his role, in the back line and his alongside some of those things you mentioned as far as the way he's looked at in that community as well. And then Brad Guzan, I mean, he's won titles. He was a U.S. national team goalkeeper, came back to start this project, played a massive role for them in their title runs. And then I think I would factor in what's still ahead of him and the fact that he's 35 years old, but goalkeepers can go for quite a ways. And in Atlanta United's case, it's a team that's constantly competing for trophies. So I think for me, Brad Guzan needs to be on the list, and I would also and I also think the same goes for Parkhurst. I think if you're looking ahead now, a guy that could possibly yep. sneak in there, Miles Robinson. Same goes. I know he didn't play in the championship.
He
run,
did. He got one game in the playoffs.
Did he play in the championship run? He kind of
yeah.
Okay, but he kind of broke through afterwards. So, but if they go on and win titles going forward, I think he's definitely a name, and he stays in MLS that could, you know, really rise up to becoming a legendary status.
Let me make two points here
for Atlanta.
Because
United.
One is if we do this again in 3 years for Atlanta United, I don't think anybody would be all that shocked if Joseph Martinez was the only name from the original list who was still on, you know, Mount Rushmore for Atlanta United, just because they've brought in so many new players and it seems like, you know, things go right and we get back to playing, they're still going to be a high level team. They're still going to compete for titles. So it wouldn't shock anybody if it changed. Second, another argument for Brad Guzan. If you think about the greatest moments, the biggest moments in Atlanta United history, almost all of them are Joseph Martinez scoring a goal, whether it's assisted by Almirón or Gressel or, you know, a long ball from LGP. The one moment that was not that was in MLS Cup right after Joseph Martinez scored. Jeremy Abobasi had a great chance inside like 8 yards, a header for Portland, and Guzan made a spectacular save. And he hasn't had to make a lot of those in his 3 years with Atlanta United because they've been so good. They just haven't had a lot of those moments in big games. But the one time they needed him in the biggest game that they've played in, he was there. He made the play. That's definitely another argument for him in terms of being on their current Mount Rushmore.
I agree. And the other play that was a part of Joseph scoring in that final was Michael Parkhurst's tackle. And that tackle that on Jeremy Abobasi, that created the goal. And that was a sort of an iconic tackle that will go down in history. I do have to disagree, though, that the names may shift over time. Now, I'm not projecting from what I've seen so far, that PT Martinez or Barco necessarily are going to ascend to this list. And Miguel Almirón, to me, had such a memorable, fantastic moment as one of the really the best players we've ever seen in MLS. So even though he wasn't there for a long time, I think I compare it to maybe a Dwayne De Rosario in Houston, where as a part of those two championship teams right away to start a franchise in a new city. And then when you factor in the record transfer fee, and then still the connection with the community and him and Joseph's friendship from Newcastle abroad. I mean, I just think that he's a name that I would see having a hard time not putting on this list for a long time to come.
Yeah, look, I think you're right about that. I mean, there's a soul aspect of it, of establishing a club, but also who he was. And I think everybody in Atlanta just seemed like certainly they could latch onto Joseph because of his kind of swagger and his like Atlanta against the world persona and the fact that they won and he scored the goals. Like Miguel Almirón felt like everybody's best friend, right? Like not just Joseph's, but everyone's, with the smiles, with the way he played, with the way he affected matches, with the way he seemed to, as a young guy from nowhere close to Atlanta, Georgia, just immediately connect with the community. That's what made it so special. So I don't think he will ever get wiped off. I think the moment and the place that he has in their history is so important that he will stay there. And by the way, who knows? Maybe he comes back at a later date. I'm just saying. Maybe someday Miguel Almirón is back in those five stripes with his boy. But here's a name that nobody has mentioned.
Sorry, let me just add to that, Weeby. There's also a decent chance that his success in Europe leads to more success for Atlanta in selling players. And I think similar to like how we had the conversation around Marc-Anthony Kay of like what he sort of as a model means for them, Miguel Almirón may carry the Atlanta United flag further throughout Europe over the next 5 years. And so then he'll continue to raise the level and profile of the club, even though he's not there.
Yeah, I think that's fair. Here's a name that hasn't come up, and we threw this out on Twitter, and the responses have been awesome. But Felipe Cardenas covers this team for The Athletic. He said Parkhurst, in addition to Joseph Martinez and Almirón. And then he threw out a name that none of us have mentioned, Tito Villalba, because first DP, and it's easy to forget it now outside the Atlanta bubble. But that fan base loved Tito Villalba. Like, we're heartbroken by the fact that he was gone. Almost like Yamil Assad had some similarity to him, but he just wasn't around as long. And Cardenas is saying Villalba should be on this Mount Rushmore. Does he have a point? Or are we going to say...
Yeah, who right. do Atlanta fans not love on that team?
Like, sure. I honestly think, like, Jeff Larenowitz is more say, of an argument than
I would say
than
if Tito...
Does.
Yeah, there's some legitimacy there, and Larentowicz has started almost all their big games at multiple positions. I would say if Tito Villalba was able to buy Weeby better internet, then he would immediately be on there, but I guess that's just impossible.
Dude, we got the Fios over here, and for whatever reason. Yeah,
clearly.
Whatever. It seems clear. It feels clear to me, except for your face is disappearing off the screens at all time. Sorry, here, Parkhurst. Or Guzan or both. We have to make decisions. We've debated this here. We've established cases. But at some point, you just have to put your foot down and say, this is what it's going to be.
To me, it's Guzan. If the three voting? Are Joseph, Miggy, and Gressel, the fourth is Guzan.
See, I still have Parkhurst and Guzan.
So you don't have Gressel.
List. That's what I had to start. Hmm. Yeah.
Dave? I have Gressel and Parkhurst. I think Parkhurst was first captain. He was there before Guzan was, like, physically on the ground, getting the city involved in the team. And just the way he plays the game, for the moment to happen where he wins that ball and creates the goal, because he watched tape, because he was folk, because that's who he's been his whole career. I think I have Parkhurst right now over Guzan.
Okay. So since we've had three votes here, two for Parkhurst, I'm going to make a third for Parkhurst. So Parky's getting in, which means we're down to the fourth spot. And it's basically, it sounds like Gressel versus Guzan. Gressel.
Let me look at my Guzan stats.
All right, we got one vote for Gressel, one for Guzan. Where are you at, Dave?
I'm already Gressel.
Wow. So I'm a tiebreaker here. I mean, being in this position, to be honest with you. To me, it still feels weird because of the trade. Like, if Atlanta United ponies up and signs Gressel and makes sure he stays in the fold, it's a no-doubter for me that he's on this Mount Rushmore.
Totally.
I just have a hard time, given that we, you know, like you said, Guzan has years and years and years to give, and we'll probably win more and more and more. So I'm going to come in here and I'm going to break this and I'm going to go Brad Guzan as our fourth, because I think of what he'll accomplish in the future will justify the decision now to put him on Mount Rushmore.
What do you mean? Now's a good time in the world to bet on future. So I appreciate you being steady and solid on that.
Gotta believe.
Yeah, you're probably right. Nothing matters. What's to come? Only what's already happened.
I'm fine with that. I don't have an issue either way. Can we talk about the teams though? Because I think there might be a little bit more of a conversation here than I realized coming into it.
About which the best team is?
Yeah. Yeah.
Really, it's not automatically going to be the MLS Cup winning team. The team that was, you know, this close to having the best record, or did for a hot second. Didn't they like tied the points record, almost got there, almost beat TFC. No,
the Red Bulls won Supporters Shield over them that year.
Yeah, but barely.
And then who won MLS Cup? The best record or the best, the like set the new points record. Yes.
Okay, fine. I missed that part. Got it. You've established. Okay, thank you for driving that point home.
I don't see the argument, David. Are you saying that the 2019 team, last year's team, was better than the... You're saying that the 2017 team was better?
No. I'm saying you had pieces in Assad and Carmona that maybe man for man were more talented than the players you end up starting, because you still have Greg Garza on the team in 2017. So the differences to 2018 is Nagbe and Escobar over Assad and Carmona. And I don't know. Rometty, I guess Nagby's obviously the success of the team.
Yeah, Rometty.
Yeah, but I'm not sure you Carmona do. Over Rometty.
I don't think.
Okay. That's fine. I just think Assad gave them another weapon that they didn't have. I think the team was deeper in 2017. Obviously, the success of 2018 is going to come out, but also was their first year. I think
they had a $15 million. Barquito, they had a $15 million DP to bring off the bench.
What did he have? An assist? You're right. I think the quality of Nagbe is what takes it over the top for me in 2018. But in looking back at it, and I think it's hard because we're trying to judge like player man for man and squad plus like where they were at in their moment as a team and the flow. Mm-hmm. I think that was the conversation we kind of had with the Galaxy, right? Like the 2014 team isn't more star-studded, but they were playing better soccer at the time. So I think you lean 2018 for that, but it was closer than I kind of had thought it would be.
I'm just going to make the executive decision. MLS Cup winners go straight into our greatest team of all time bracket. So Atlanta United, as we settled it, Joseph, Almiron, Parkey, and then Guzan. Gressel just on the outside, looking in. I'm sure Atlanta United fans will have an opinion about that. Hey, man, I'm still pissed off about the Cienfuegos first Beckham thing. So that'll stick in my craw for all time. I should have known better than to tell Charlie we would do a popularity contest on Twitter between the two of them, as if Beckham wouldn't win that every single time. All right, let's do RSL. Yeah? We have Nat Borchers coming up right now, but first, some quick tweets. You know, I'm going to read the one from Zach in Lawrence, Kansas. Rock Chalk, baby. He moved from Salt Lake City to go to KU. He says his RSL Mount Rushmore is pretty easy. Raimondo, Beckerman, Morales, and Olave. The first three for him are non-negotiable, which I think is going to be the case for us as well. He says there's an option to switch out Olave for Tony Beltran, because Beltran spent his whole career at the club, was key to the 2009-13 years. And the only little knock on him was he was on the bench for Robbie Russell in 2009 behind him. And then Lars Pedersen in Georgetown, Kentucky, says he's been listening to the show since 2010 World Cup through every single ear of the show. You'll remember this, Dave. He says he has the gray in his Netflix queue because of MLS at the Movies with Simon and Nick. And if you don't know about MLS at the Movies, I remember that day like it was yesterday. Absolutely incredible. Lars grew up in Utah, so he lives in Kentucky, but still RSL TID. He says his Rushmore is easy as well. Raimondo first, Beckerman second, Javi Mo three, and then Jason Christ four, and I guess he's combining playing time as well as coaching time for Christ. Lars says he could go Saborío over Christ maybe, but for him, Christ gets the nod. And then the player he says nobody will think about is Nat Borchers. I got to agree here. The first three are easy. It's Raimondo, Beckerman, and Javi Moe. But let's bring on now Nat Borchers for an AT&T call to the field to get some stories from the good old days and hopefully establish the fourth on our RSL Mount Rushmore. Nat, welcome to the show, man.
Thanks, guys. It's an honor to be on with you.
I feel like I'm in your house right now. I feel like I'm right next to you. It's so intimate.
We're getting to know each other really well here, guys. I mean, I'm in God's kitchen / living area. I'm in your whatever room that is, and you're in my room. This is where the magic happens, man. We're very intimate. Right?
You have a beautiful pillow. Let's talk RSL, and let's take it all the way back to the day that you signed with the club and the day that you walked in the door. What was this club like when you arrived?
Yeah, well, I'd come over from playing 2 years in Norway in the Tippeligaen and had a really up and down time there. The team got relegated my last year, so we were headed down to the first division, and I got a call from Robin Fraser, who was my former I played with him in Colorado, and now he was the assistant coach for Real Salt Lake. And he said, "Hey, we're building something special. Are you interested in coming over?" And honestly, at that point in time, I would have signed with anybody. I was ready just to get the heck out of Norway and come back to MLS. And it ended up working out, you know, really well in terms of that. But remember the first day, walking in training camp, we were in Florida. I think we're in Miami somewhere, and walked out to training. Jason Kreis had this piece of paper. It said, "The team is the star" on it. And it had a list of all these things that were expected of you as a player and as a defender, center back, especially about the way we're going to play, the formation, the style, the belief, all that stuff. And I was hooked. I was like, wow, I'd never seen anything like this before. And that was kind of, my first impression of the club.
So what I remember is Rice Eccles, the expansion team, scrappy, but let's be real, not very good or very competitive. And then obviously you win MLS Cup in 2009, but was that the moment that shifted the club from scrappy to one of the best teams, or was it earlier than that that you saw it, or was it something else?
Well, I'd played for Colorado before going to Norway, and so we'd played against Salt Lake, that first iteration of the team, and it was ugly. I mean, we lost to them. They got their first home win against us. And then we came back and I think beat them subsequent times during the season. But watching their season, it was a cluster. I mean, they obviously gave up a ton of goals. They couldn't quite, get things figured out. They're obviously an expansion club. So they were, the bottom dwellers of the West back then. And, they had, all those issues with like the Colorado, the Mastroeni Czechitz rivalry thing that happened and that blow up and then Kyle moving over from Colorado to Salt Lake. And so that kind of changed, that kind of formed, that rivalry. But yeah, it was wild, coming over and seeing, okay, in 07, they were kind of starting to build it. Jason had become a head coach of the team midseason in 07. And then at the end of the year, they'd started to get some more results. They'd brought in Javier Morales, who was injured that year. So they didn't really see how he performed. And then, the pieces were kind of coming together. We signed Hamison Olave that preseason. Nick Raimondo had gotten signed, I think, in 07 at some point in time. Kyle was there. Chris Wingert. Tony Beltran was a rookie in 08 when I came through. So the pieces were just kind of coming together, but we still didn't quite have it at that point in time.
Do you think Jason Kreis knows the acronym to Team is the Star? Because we laugh about this all the time. I'll let everybody else do the math here. Team is the Star.
Yeah, I actually hadn't put that one together until you guys mentioned it. But yeah,
no,
honestly, I hadn't. I haven't thought about it. I don't sit there, putting acronyms together, guys, like you guys do. But yeah, it was. I think we're one of the first teams in the league. To play the diamond and to have that kind of, that kind of style of belief where we just wanted to possess and we wanted to high press and we kind of knew. It took us a while to get there, but we knew how to respond in almost every situation of a game, whether we were up a goal, down a man, up a man, whether we were, defending those leads, we knew exactly what to do if we were on the road, if we were at home. And so I feel like, we had this identity, this style, this way of playing, and, we could kind of plug and play, players that, kind of came through after we had built the formation. But 08 was really a tough year. We struggled through the season. We didn't really have, I think, the consistency that we wanted. And it really came down to that last game against Colorado that we needed to get a result. You know, and we scored, I think, in like the 90th minute, Yurim Ovsisian. And I'd heard rumors that they were thinking about blowing up the team had we not gotten that result, because that actually pushed us into the playoffs that year. And we ended up making a run. We opened up our new stadium. We played New York Red Bulls in the, I think, the conference semifinal. And we ended up losing to them. I think Dave Vandenberg scored that goal. But that kind of propelled us to the next season in 09. We go on that run to win the championship against LA. And then 2010 was like this magical year where we had, you know, we only lost three games, I think, the whole year in regular season. We kind of hit this, you know, this momentum. We found that consistency and it was fun. And then from there on, we just kept building.
We'll talk about the Mount Rushmore for you for RSL and put you on the spot with that one. And of course, get your best team of all time. There's some debate to be had there, but I want to kind of rewind it. And you said Javi Mo comes in, he's injured. I think about number 10s in this league that don't get the due that they deserve. And like the MLS nerds out there, the ones that us probably, I mean, I'll wax poetic about Javi Mo for an hour, but you can ask a lot of recent fans and other fans and his name won't come up in those discussions. I need the firsthand side for you as your cat creeps over your shoulder behind you. That side. Javi Mo, man, how brilliant is this guy? I mean, you've played with Valeri, you've played with all sorts of incredible players in your career, but to me, he's one of the special players in MLS history.
Yeah, and you know, the thing that struck me about him was that first preseason. We went down to Argentina. We're in Rosario in 2008, and I remember having training sessions with this guy. And his work rate really impressed me, because most number 10s, creative players, you know, I played with, you know, a few at that point in time, you know, they were, let's be honest, lazy on the other side of the ball. When they got the ball, you know, they were obviously trying to create, but let's be honest, a lot of times they would switch off. They wouldn't fight. They wouldn't defend for you. But this guy was just doing doggies up and down the field. He was trying to, you know, prove himself. We were playing these, you know, second division teams in Argentina, and he was just back and forth. And his fitness level was like one of the highest that I've ever seen from a number 10. And he would tackle, and he would, you know, yell at players, and he would lead. And I mean, he had all those qualities. And then on the other side, he was incredible, you know, in transition. He would play that killer ball. His first touch was unbelievable. And the guy could finish. And, you know, he had all those things. It didn't really come out. I don't think people didn't really start noticing until, you know, 2009, maybe, when we started to get more love because we were, you know, went to the final. But man, this guy, he was unbelievable. In my opinion, you know, he's the best number 10 that I've played with. And I played with some good ones for sure, but he was unbelievable.
When you look back, let's go to the big story. You mentioned Javi Mo, the CCL run for that team. It's one of the things we talk about on the show constantly, because it's basically as close as an MLS team has still ever gotten. His goal against Monterrey in the first leg of the final, I think, is one of the best goals in MLS history because of the quality, the creativity, and the moment. But when you look back on that whole run, you guys had the wild game in the rain down at Cruz Azul. You were up 3-1. You lost 5-4. You have the games at Saprissa and the Purple Monster, all that stuff. What stands out from that run when you think back on it nowadays?
There's so much. I mean, the way we went through, you know, that whole period of winning those games, of taking it seriously, you know, first and foremost. And I don't think many teams had taken it that seriously before. It was kind of like one of those competitions. It was like, well, we got Open Cup, you know, we got regular season. You know, how seriously we want to take this thing? You know, we got injuries, you know, while we're dealing with all this, you know. And, you know, it was the first time, you know, Jason and I think ownership, you know, at the time, Checkets and Deloy Hansen had just said, look, we want this thing. We want to put, you know, the league, you know, more on the map. We want to put RSL on the map. And we're kind of playing for pride a little bit in those games initially. And then we made this run. I remember that game, you know, in Cruz Azul. And, you know, we lost the game, but it was unbelievable. It was back and forth. There was 9 goals scored between the two teams. And, you know, we just had a special group that, you know, we really didn't give up. you fast forward to the final, and you know we'd beaten Saprissa in that series, and we're playing against Monterey. That game was, they could have been up probably 4 goals in the first half in Monterey. It was hot. It was a typical Mexican field where it was like you play the ball over the top and it just stops. So like for me as a center back, it was like slow, who was chasing around Humberto Suazo. I was like, this sucks, And so I was dead like the first 15 minutes. I know Homison, my center back partner, was dead as well. But we ended up kind of fighting and getting through that. And we get to the end of the game, we're only down a goal. And then Javier makes that run, makes that play. And it's like, oh, we're 2-2 now. All we have to do is go back home and get a draw. And as long as it's, 1-1, we're good. And obviously, that was a tough one. One of those games that you look back on, you're like, man, I wish we would have done better. Wish we would have done better in certain moments. And, just one of those you can't get back.
We'll talk about the MLS Cup win. Unfortunately, I guess we've started on the disappointing side. You have the CCL final. You have 2013 in Kansas City, the crazy freezing cold game. You have the Open Cup that year against, let's be honest, garbage Fire DC. Like, did you ever think about, or when this group gets back together and you guys are having beers, you're just hanging out, like, damn, what could have been, in the sense that we really could have filled up this trophy case? Because for what you were, what you accomplished, the players that you had an opportunity to be, and you still are, in the conversation of one of the best groups in MLS history. Like, it was that good.
Yeah, and certainly we had our 10-year reunion last year for RSL, that 09 championship team. And yeah, that's one of the first things that, you come back to is like, we won a championship in 2009. We did a great job. We set the tone there, but we got back to the big games 3 times and we couldn't get it done. And that hurts for sure. You look back as a player in your career, I've won 2 MLS Cups, it's the losses that you think about more than the wins for some reason. And I think back to certainly, 2013 MLS Cup, we could have done better there. I think back to, the CCL game that we should have, done better against Monterey. And certainly the Open Cup game in 2013 against DC United. And those were all games that were decided by goal, and it's like, the game of soccer is just, it's so close, those edges that you play on, those bounces, and you have to get it done in the important moments, and we couldn't. We were a good team, but you look back at the teams that did get it done, you have to say, hey, my hat's off to you. Those LA Galaxy championship teams, throughout the 2011, 2012, those teams, they got it done, and we couldn't get it done. So yeah, we were really good, but in the big moments, we couldn't get it done. So that definitely, you think back on that as a player. But you certainly, we had a good team. We just were almost there.
Let's talk about
go ahead.
This club in total, though, because we brought you on for a reason. We're talking Mount Rushmores. We're trying to put together the best groups in MLS history. So let's start with this one. You had some great teams, 2009, 2010/11, and we've got to figure out how we work that whole thing together. 2013, what is the single best group in RSL history? What's the one season that you'd put up against LAFC 2019, TFC 2017 for our fans to vote for?
Well, there's so much that gets talked about a group's talent, their potential, the style of play, the tactics, but a lot of things that at times, you hear stories about the locker room, how good the locker room is. And we had a really good locker room throughout, that entire phase that I was a player at RSL, but the one locker room that was the best was 2013. I mean, that team was incredible. We just had, on the field, we were good. Off the field, we hung out. If you probably scroll back through my Instagram account, you'll see, a lot of evidence of like us, team bonding in terms of like, we'd go on the road, we'd wear like, camouflage outfits. We'd wear khaki outfits. We would have these, these just fun parties and hangouts. And it just felt like we were such a tight group, and we got to MLS Cup. I don't think we were the most talented RSL team in the time I was there, but we had such a tight group, and that's what kind of got us to 2013 MLS Cup. And man, I look back on that group and I wish I could just hang out with all those guys, every single Sunday, because it just felt like family. It felt like fun. I just enjoyed the soccer. I enjoyed, being around those guys. And I think that I look back and I think that's like my favorite, you know, team in terms of like just the locker room.
Can I get a quick story from you? Because I think about 2013, Kansas City, RSL, it had grown into something. And that was really even more a jumping off point. But we always hear about the stories in preseason. How did this sort of rivalry start? Who were the protagonists? Take me onto that training pitch, that like scrimmage game or whatever it was when the beef started. I need that give me the history lesson, man.
Yeah, well, you know, I remember we were playing down in Arizona. I think we're in one of those training grounds. It wasn't Casa Grande. It was the one that was in Scottsdale somewhere. And we had a training camp game against Kansas City. First, you know, 60 minutes, I think we're going to be for the starters, and then the reserves were going to come in and take care of things. At some point in time, I think it was Roger Espinoza came in, you know, studs up on Andy Williams from behind. And Andy goes down. Will Johnson comes in and just like throws Roger, I think, to the ground and just starts wailing on him. And, you know, next thing you know, everybody's coming through. And, you know, the game just got called at that point in time. We're just like, hey, we're done. We're good. And I just remember, you know, that was, you know, Sporting Kansas City when they were, Vermees had just started building there in terms of what he had. And it was just like feisty. It was physical. Those guys were good soccer players. They had something special though, too. They could also, you know, create. And, you know, we saw a little bit of us in them, I think, you know, and that kind of spurred us on. You know, I looked at Matt Beisler and I was like, you know, this guy's going to come in and, you know, be the, you know, the best center back in the league. I was like, I want to see it from him. And, you know, obviously he was good too. And it was like, you know, I think it was a lot of that was just like us seeing, you know, a little bit of ourselves when we looked at Kansas City.
We're doing an all loathe team right now, Nat. And that Kansas City team of those times had a lot of potentially loathsome characters if you were on the other team or the other fan base. I mean, Aurelien Collen, Rogers in there for sure. Jimmy Nielsen's probably in there. Dom Dwyer has got to be in there. But that RSL side had some of that too, with Homason and certainly Espíndola and Beckerman and Will Johnson. Who was the guy for you in your career, someone who you would put on this all-loathe team? The guy you just hated playing against, knew that your fans hated, just like occupied a place in your heart of, I don't know if hatred is the right word, but extreme dislike.
That was a lot of those for me, to be honest with you. I kind of got a, you know, I played my best soccer when I was upset, when I was angry, you know, at other players for whatever reason, perceived or real. You know, so I think back to like Omar Gonzalez, for example. You know, I would always compare myself to their center backs in the league. So I was always thinking, okay, what are they making? You know, should I be making as much as they are, you know, or yeah, show me the money. And so I remember Omar had signed a new contract with LA. I think this was after the year they had won the championship, and I think he had scored a goal in that year. And I remember I was marking him on a set piece, and, you know, he was complaining to the ref about how physical I was getting with him. And I was like, Omar, you're getting paid all this money. You shouldn't be complaining about anything, man. You should be happy with your life. Like, seriously, you should be happy. And he went and he dunked on me. He scored a goal after that. And then he celebrated right in my face. And I was like, well, you know, fair play to him, man. I was talking trash. I deserved it. But, you know, since, you know, that from that point in time, we had a pretty healthy, you know, disagreement on the field in terms of you know, that kind of rivalry. Colleen, yeah, definitely had one with him as well. It just because I just didn't like the way he played. I just didn't think that he ever, you know, my biggest issue with you know, a defender is when the ball goes behind you, you know, what is your reaction? Do you stop and let play go, or are you racing back to help out? And so, you know, sometimes I'd watch games and be like, oh, he wasn't helping. He would just defend what's in front of him. And so every time the ball went over the top, we're like, well, he gave up. So I would jaw to him, you know, and tell him what I thought about, you know, how he played. But yeah, you know, and there was the strikers too. You know, Robbie Keane and I got into it a lot because we saw each other quite a bit. He had some great banter, man. I remember there was a game when Ziggy had made a sub, and I was like, oh, you guys are changing formation, obviously, to like, whatever, 4-5-1. And Robbie looks at the field. He's like, you're an idiot, man. We're staying in 4-3-3. You know, you better get your coaching badges. And I was like, I looked at it. I was like, Oh, he's right. He's right. So so much for that. So it was good. You know, I enjoyed, you know, playing against those guys, and just feel like, and off the field, it was always like, you know, you have a beer with those guys and you're good. But yeah, there was definitely a lot of them. No doubt about that. I could probably go on forever.
We'd love you to, Nat. Obviously, we love doing this with you, but we have to get your Mount Rushmore here because you're the expert. You were there for 6 years in RSL. We feel like we can lock in Raimondo, Kyle, and Javi Moe as three of the four that are going to go into that pantheon. But we want you to let us know who's your fourth, who's the last person, for whatever reason you choose, that goes on that list.
Yeah, it's a great question. I think there's an argument to be made for, you know, guys like Brian Dunseth and Andy Williams, who they started with a club, right, in 2005. And, you know, Andy continued with us and, you know, won a championship. So he, you know, he really put his time in. I think he's a supporter's favorite. You know, you look at Hamas and Olave, you know, he's a guy who I played next to who was, I mean, he was a beast, man. You know, he had everything that I didn't, you know, in terms of, you know, just the speed, you know, the strength and you know, he kept you know, opposing teams honest just in the way he played. You know, I look at Will Johnson, you know, he's a guy who spent a lot of time with the club, won a championship with us. Tony Beltran would be one, I think, you know, spent a decade with the club before retiring. You know, there's quite a few guys. Ned Grabovoy could also get a shake just because, you know, he had, you know, some of his best career moments with Salt Lake. So I think
it's hard. Have to pick one.
Yeah, I think it's hard. I don't know if I'd be able to just go with one, guys. I'm going to go with the political answer here and say, you know, I'm going to leave that to you guys.
Wow.
We brought you on for this whole thing, Matt, and you can't even give us one name.
Really?
Okay, how about this?
Okay.
No. Sorry, I was giving you the out, and now you went back.
No, Weeby, stop.
No outs.
I'll go back in. No outs. I'm in.
What's the one name?
All right. I'll go with Tony. I'd say Tony.
Yeah.
Would be the one guy I'd throw in there just because of, you know, his longevity with the club, his loyalty, you know, and the fact that, you know, he started, you know, how many times do you have a player that starts with a club and finishes with the club in a 10-year span? You know, I'm just waiting for Deloy Hansen to give him his testimonial. And then, you know, maybe I'll get called back in for a game.
Now that we got you on the spot, though, Nat, last one. You texted me yesterday. You said you had some big news you really wanted to come on the show and share outside of these Mount Rushmores. Is there any announcement you'd like to make for the group?
Well, that was yesterday, Goss. All right. So, yeah, I was coming out of retirement yesterday. You obviously didn't fall for that. You should have. I think you were about to.
My heart was racing, and I
feel like
texted.
You almost did. I think you almost did. I was like, I really wish Goss would fall for this so I could get a tweet from him and, you know, retweet it and perpetuate it. But yeah, I was coming out of retirement yesterday. Today, no, back to the bike.
Back to the bike today. This has been a wonderful interview. We always love chatting about the history, but I think the best part, and I think Matt Doyle would agree, is your cat lurking over your shoulder, whose name I now need. I must know the name of your cat.
Female cat, by the way, female cat named Taco.
Taco. Okay.
Goes along with our show. Doyle's cat's name is Taquito.
Oh, perfect. And you got Taco FC Dallas jersey in the background.
Yeah.
So we're good.
Perfect.
We're all in.
Well, there's our
Taco
start.
Thursday.
Tony Beltran is the name for Nat Borchers. Nat, we'll let you get back to, I don't know, whatever you're doing. Hopefully sitting at home and social distancing. We assume that you are, man. Thank you for joining us and showing off your lovely bedroom, man.
Thanks, guys. Always a pleasure. You guys take care.
All right. Now, Borchers says it's Tony Beltran. What say you guys? Anyone. Literally anyone.
I get the full argument for Tony Beltran. And I think, and I've made this point multiple times, I think part of this is the fans' perception of the players, what they mean to a club. And I agree with Nat in that he played his whole career for RSL. He was there for some of the biggest moments. I think if he'd been healthier at different times, he probably would have had a more substantial national team career. So I think he'd be more of a, you know, public figure in the league rather than just in Salt Lake, which would change it. So I get all of the arguments for Tony Beltran. He's also still a part of the front office, still lives in Salt Lake City, still connected to the team. I think on high-end talent and ability, Olave and Sabo probably beat him out for the years they had. And he's not going to mention him, but I think Nat has to be in the conversation as well for being one of the best center backs and part of the best center back pairing for 6 years in MLS.
Kalen, you played against these guys. You played against Olave. What's the argument for Olave?
Well, he was the best center back in the league for me for stretches. And he was a guy that, I mean, alongside Borchers, they were impossible to play against. But Sabo was probably, he was the guy that I was terrified of. Everybody was just so afraid of. He could had incredible speed. His strength was obvious, but he had a lot of intelligence and ability to really read the game and influence the game in different ways. So, he was up there. I think Sabo, for me, probably takes the cake as far as my spot, just because club all-time leading goal scorer, 63 goals, so lethal in the box and scored a lot of big goals for the club as well. So not the biggest personality, a little bit more of a silent assassin type, but really as far as top-end talent goes and best strikers, kind of that era, he's got to be mentioned in that group.
Doesn't seem like, and maybe I'm off here, an RS.
I don't mean to take, I almost feel like because Nat was so good, it almost takes away, it's hard to pick away from Olave, and it's like they almost split the vote in some ways as a tandem.
Nat was there longer than Olave, which is his argument, but Olave won defensive player of the year because as Kalen said, he was the best center back in the league at his time.
And Nat also has years in Colorado. He has an MLS Cup in Portland. He's still in Portland.
How does that get him on the Mount Rushmore of RSL?
That's what I'm saying, is that there's a little bit for Nat. There's like a little bit of a split there. Like it's not as for Saborillo, for Olave, for Beltran, certainly they are.
What do you mean? Olave won a supporter shield in New York.
Crap. I forgot about that. I'm just getting corrected all day. All right. No. Throw Olave out then. Get him out of here. It's down to Beltran.
I will say this.
Kreis is an interesting one because he scored goals and was a part of that, the beginning of that club. And then, of course, what he's done as a manager, really defining that era and the style of play that team played. Every team around the league, I remember playing in Chicago and sitting there talking with Logan Paws and John Thorington and everybody just even as competitors, just admiring the way that they played soccer. It's kind of the way that they were the first team to me that played a completely different brand of soccer in MLS and really redefined the style as well as the substance. So sort of the way that everybody admires LAFC right now at the time, which is ironic because Thorington was the one who was sitting there talking to me about it as well. That was the way everybody around MLS is from the players looked at those RSL teams and was like, man, I would just kill to play in this system or this style, even though it was really hard to replicate. I mean, other names that stand out to me are Chris Wingert was around that time. Tony Beltran, of course, I think he really speaks to a lot of the soul of that club. Andy Williams as well was a phenomenal player, still involved in the staff there. And then Kreis, I think in the early days when RSL really wasn't, you know, they actually had some fun teams in those expansion years, but I remember there was one moment where they were just pinging it around us at Rice-Eccles when it was with the fire with Blanco there, and the ball comes up and they were playing like the ball bounced up and Mehdi Bellucci goes to like grab the ball out of the air. They were just showboating on us and then just let it drop down to his feet and play. And Andy Williams, I think, megged me a couple minutes after that. But it was I think the only thing that is tough, because we did put Ben Olsen in for DC United, and that felt right because of his sort of combination of manager and playing career. So that's making me feel like Kreis should definitely be in too, but I just have trouble because Kreis was so good for FC Dallas and he won the league MVP in 1999. And when I think of those Dallas Burn teams, like Jason Kreis is one of the first names that comes off that list to me as like a club icon for them. So it makes it hard because he's just been so damn successful.
I don't love the idea of putting guys.
I don't know. I'm kind of on the fence.
I think if it's for individual teams who the team didn't win, they weren't good when those guys were playing on the field. And Kreis unquestionably is the definitive manager for RSL, but we've, you know, made a point of separating out managers from, from players in this instance. The Olsen one wasn't
but we've made
really an exception. I mean, Olsen was among the I mean, we were relitigating here, but he was literally the 1999 MLS Cup MVP. Like he, you know, he was a great player for DC United. Not that Christ wasn't, but he was a great player for RSL when RSL were really bad. I think it's going to be Alave.
So who's it going to be for Tony Buttron is great,
especially because, as Kalen said, RSL were the first team to really play kind of a different style in MLS. And a part of that was like, okay, teams would go and they would sit on Beckerman, or, you know, if one of the other shuttlers dropped back, they would sit on those guys and say, we're not going to let you dictate the game. Beltran was good enough and technical enough that suddenly the game started running through him. Like, there weren't a lot of right backs in the league at that point, or even now really, who could do that. So he has a very, very strong argument. I understand why Nat made it, but Jaimison Alave was the best defender in the league for a run of like 2 or 3 years. And he's still with the team now. So I'm making the managerial argument as well, but like he won a title last year with Real Monarchs, but no,
he actually won a title.
He was just so good. There aren't five teams in the league who had a center back who was that good for a run of 3 years. RSL did, and that was the reason, well, one of the big reasons why they were one of the very best teams in the league.
Yeah, I'm going back. I've gone all over the place in this one, but yeah, with that diamond midfield really powered them, and Javi Mo, and I think the finishing part was Sabo's role in the team, but yeah, I'm going back. When I'm picturing the Mount Rushmore and I'm seeing the faces up there, like, I'm seeing Olave's face again, and I'm scared. So I feel like he's getting my vote in this one too.
And I'll tell you this, Kalen, we didn't get into it because we didn't have enough time. We don't know why, but we brought it up to Nat before we got on, and he laughed off Sabo. So it wasn't an option for him. He was between, I think, Olave, Andy Williams, and
I mean, I would put Nat up there before yeah. Sabo.
I think that's four of us. Okay.
Boom.
Olave. There it is.
Moyle hates Pura Vida.
We've decided. The first three, very easy for us in RSL, is Mount Rushmore. You've got Kyle Beckerman, Nick Romando, Javier Morales, and then the final here, Jaimison Alave. What's the best team? I don't think you can put 2009 in this category, despite them being the MLS Cup winners. They were not, in my opinion at least, the best team. 2010. A lot of almost there, including the CCL final, 2013. Nat says maybe not the most talented team that they had when he was talking to us, but certainly had two opportunities to win championships that came up just short. I think for RSL, the greatest team comes down to most talented and a combination of results, because unfortunately for them, that final result just, it wasn't there 3 out of 4 times. What's your gut say, Kalen? What year were you like, ooh, this team is at its very, very peak?
2010. I think 2010, from what I remember, was the team that was, because they had just come off winning the title, and they had the confidence from that, and from there they seemed to even kick on and play even better. So from what I remember, 2010 to me was a special year for watching, like, all of the pieces, the way I was just rewatching, I keep comparing it to LAFC, but I was just rewatching in the MLS Classics remix match of the first El Trafico, and you could still see them kind of figuring it out with Vela was the 10 and Latif was playing out on the wing. And then they just didn't have quite all the pieces yet figured out. Atuesta was coming off the bench. You could see the pieces starting to formulate, but it wasn't quite realized maybe even till the next season. And I think that was kind of the way 2009 was from my recollection. So 2010, I think, was the year where it really started coming together on the pitch in a pretty special way.
Nat said they lost 3 games. They actually lost 4. 15 wins, 4 losses, 11 draws. That's incredible. What's maybe even more incredible was not the goal scoring power of this team, because there were better teams in front of Nat. 2013, 14 scored many more goals. 20 goals allowed, plus 25 goal differential, scoring only 45 goals. I mean, that's absurd, Doyle. This team,
yeah,
I mean,
for, not only could for they punish a long you, time, I think
but they just
were
ground you into dust, like, too.
The only team, or maybe like one of two teams, that scored more than twice as many goals as they allowed. 20 goals allowed over the course of the season is easily an MLS record. I think the second best ever in a season is 26 goals are allowed, which is that year's LA Galaxy team. That Galaxy team won the Shield by 3 points over RSL. And that was a team that was bracketed by the win in 2009 MLS Cup and then the run to the CCL final in 2011. That was the team. And the difference between us remembering that RSL side is maybe the greatest of all time and a team that was filled with almosts is that Fabian Espíndola just couldn't finish any of the 15 chances he had against Monterrey in the finals. But that 2010 team, they were something else. They played beautiful soccer. I mean, it was grinded out. It was hard. It was physical. It was everything else. But like when they had the ball, which was often, I think they had like 60% possession that year, they really used it. It's one of the all-time great teams in MLS. And I remain to this day absolutely stunned that they lost to Dallas in the first round of those playoffs. Just absolutely shocked that that happened.
RSL. I think that's the choice here. Of course, if you have any at-large bids and maybe it's an RSL squad, holler at us, 401-206-0MLS. Let's do Vancouver Whitecaps and get to the mailbag here, guys. Vancouver, it's been a little bit more checkered in Major League Soccer. And just a note for all of you at home here, the Whitecaps have an incredible history. We are not considering anything outside of the MLS years. So keep that in mind as we go through this conversation. I'm going to just start us off. I think you have to have Alphonso Davies be the first face on this list. I know the time in the first team was short, but everything that he represents for the Vancouver Whitecaps and sort of his peak of excellence to me, as well as the fact that he's Canadian, makes him the first face to go up on this Mount Rushmore. Any disagreement there?
I agree with you. I have Alphonso Davies up there also. Let's be real. We're about to go through this. No one else is a lockdown. And so what Davies, the face of the franchise at this point, even when he's gone, he's going to be on the national team for 15 years. He's the face of Canadian soccer. He was at the bid for the World Cup. Like Alphonso Davies is everything. And he was fun to watch on the team. And obviously he was young, but when you have no one else, you don't have a Javi Moe and you don't have a Kyle Beckerman or an Eddie Pope who had it, you know, for 5 to 7 years in MLS, you're clearly going to go with Davies. And then we started to go through the list after that. Does anyone feel strongly, about anyone besides Alphonso Davies?
Yes, yes. I'm going to go yes. For me, Jay DeMeritt needs to be on the list. If you go around, their first big signing to captain the club and the excitement really of being the personality of that team. And then on the field, he had injuries and that was the thing that really hampered him. But like an absolute warrior, you got to remember this was also coming off the 2010 World Cup national team that had so much hype and Jay had a fantastic tournament. So going to Vancouver and really starting off that club. I mean, if you go to matches in Vancouver, like they sing for Jay, he's got like their artwork about him all over it. You might find him having a pint of beer with the
Voyagers,
fans in the, Wanderers, I guess.
That's Canada's supporters group. Yeah. Southsiders Voyagers, is my bad. Vancouver.
No. Yeah.
That's why you don't remember.
I don't know. Honestly, I was with Jay having beers with him. So yeah, that's why I don't remember. That was a fun movement episode. But yeah, I would definitely put Jay in that list of like cult icon figures for the club.
I think that's fair. I think that's a good one. And outside of those two, the one that I came to my mind first for like on the field plus a little bit of longevity, because no one really has it, was Kendall Waston, but he sort of burned the house down behind him on the way out when he kind of trashed the entire locker room, was a bit difficult to work with his final year, but he's like one of the top five scorers in club history, as well as the starting
Camilo
center back.
Camilo
that was the other big name that came to my mind. Doyle,
two
is there
seasons,
anyone that
especially his final season push there, in? But you know, he left acrimoniously. Yeah, yeah. Pedro Morales had
talk
one
about leaving
great season and two pretty meh seasons. Russell Tybert's made 200 appearances. I don't think so. No.
Would you put Tybert in? That's, is he good enough to be on a Mount Rushmore?
The Caps for this first decade of their MLS existence is they never, they were not able to create and maintain a high level team and certainly weren't able to develop, other than Alphonso Davies, weren't really able to develop their young players into high level players. It's hard to do a Mount Rushmore for this team. It is incredibly hard.
Yeah,
so Kakuta Mane was there for a large stretch.
He looked like it was going to have stretches. Darren Maddox showed promise early on in his career. You thought that was maybe going to be a successful run for him. But I think because of the fact that there has been a lot of turnover and not as much success as they would have liked, the longevity of those who have stayed actually speaks a little bit more. And I think that's a good argument for Tybert. The name that I would put up there on my list that I wrote down was Jordan Harvey. He has 199 appearances. I think that's the most. What Doyle just said, I don't think Tybert quite has 100 yet.
Harvey 200. Has more appearances. Tybert's obviously there more years.
Club with appearances, and he has 10 goals. I remember like big goals for being a left back. He's also the only one that's played in 4 playoffs all of them that the Whitecaps have qualified for. So not exactly a name that pops out to you on the list, but I think we've seen now in LAFC just how important he can be to a team and how good he was, even though early on in his career with Philadelphia Union, or he moved around quite a bit. And Vancouver was a place where he really became a fixture, even though there was Christian Dean and some young players that had come along that similarly to João Mourinho or
João Moutinho. Yeah.
The first draft pick for LAFC.
João Moutinho,
yeah, who's come along, and then it just keeps going back to Harv. And so I think for what he was able to do, longevity, even through a lot of changes all around you, that's a really difficult circumstance to do. I had to live through that through some Chicago Fire years. So a lot of credit to Harv. I would put him, due to his appearances, his play for the club in that group.
Some of the other names we got on Twitter from fans, David Osted, who was there for a number of years as goalkeeper, Eric Hassley, who was the first DP.
We could just put those goals,
two of the greatest goals in MLS history, one against Seattle and one against TFC. For sure. Because he didn't really score many other goals in his time. I thought of Kenny Miller because I felt like he was the face of the team, but for 1 year.
No. I'm more of a Barry Robson guy here.
Kofi.
So
yeah, for sure. Barry Robson, 7 games.
Oh my goodness.
Mustafa Jarju. But yeah, and Gershon Kofi, who was a baller.
I mean, YP Lee, you could he helped get Mbom Wong there. I mean, he's part of the club. He stayed connected to the club. I think he's still in Vancouver. So he has an argument.
He got a lot of fan votes.
But you're like,
he got a lot of fan votes.
It is really
they
tough to do
with.
It for this club because you can't go link it to championships. And I truly hope that you can all hear my child.
Cam is a big White Caps fan.
It's the only thing we can
hear. He likes to talk to himself as he tries to go to bed.
He's just as frustrated.
He's doing his own podcast in there. I don't know what it's about.
So let's say.
Go figure a weeby has some lungs.
So let's say right now we're at Alphonso Davies, Jay DeMeritt, and Jordan Harvey. I think Kendall Waston's the fourth.
I do too.
Does anyone else want to vote for someone?
How about Kendall? How about the press conferences after the final year of
For sure. He definitely burned the place down on the way out.
Hey, but some clubs, you gotta, that's how it goes.
Yeah, that's true.
Yeah, maybe he saved them.
It's not always a pretty breakup.
I mean, in that way,
it's better than signing a contract with another team.
In that way, I like
YP
Lee in some ways to be in the spot, though his impact is not as large, just because it's hard to say, like, throw Kendall up on the Mount Rushmore when he did burn it down on his way out.
Yeah, I feel good about that's a
almost,
that's a more
it's
positive.
Almost like a it's like an elder statesman, right? As opposed to sort of a divisive figure in some ways.
Well, Tybert, if you want to go Tybert for also, he's in that appearance list. He played in the academy or in the USL system, I believe, or he had to come up through the ranks.
The residency at the time.
There you go. Thank you.
Yeah.
And then also, he's the only one on this list that's still with the club. So
for sure.
Somebody that can continue to have an impact or a role as things move forward under Marc dos Santos. So
I'll throw
another argument for him.
I'll throw in a vote
Doyle,
for Tybert.
Do you have a vote?
I know they still love Jamie Merritt. He's probably, but like he played 6,000 minutes. He played like essentially two seasons worth of minutes. He only had one healthy year. To me, that's more of a cult figure than a Mount Rushmore guy. But I do. I also think that it's like some teams just don't. They haven't earned a Mount Rushmore yet, and that's what it is. For like, if we're in 2025 and we're still having the same argument about the Caps, Mount Rushmore, then things in the 20s haven't gotten much better than they did in the 2010s.
Do we put this one to fan vote? What?
Sure. All right. So the fan vote is Kendall Waston, Russell Tybert, and YP Lee.
Yeah. Yeah. Can you do multiple choices in votes? That way we could have them pick the final two? Huh. Or should we just say J. DeMeritt is in?
No.
He played 6,000 minutes.
Kalen came with his research. He was ready to go. Yeah, respect no. the man.
Come on.
And Jordan Doyle, Harvey.
No one was on this team for more than 2 years except Russell Tybert. And that in alone is an indictment on the franchise.
Jordan Harvey should be there.
Jordan Harvey's already on. We already put him in. He's locked in with Alphonso Davies and J. DeMeritt.
Those are three. I say take the fourth.
Fine. We'll take this one to the people. Although I don't know how much I trust the people after this fiasco that was Beckham versus Cienfuegos. All right, how about another fun conversation, which is what's the greatest Whitecaps team of the MLS era?
All right, Weeby, great point. What do you guys want to do for all-time top team for the... So the candidates are 2012, which was their second season in MLS, their first in the playoffs. 2015, when they were second in the Western Conference, and they won the Canadian Championship. And then 2017, where they won a playoff game. I'm pretty sure they smoked San Jose in the opening round.
And then
the
they basically, like they did not register a shot against
in MLS history. Does anyone feel strongly? Yeah.
Seattle.
Right, so give them 30 seconds to enjoy themselves.
That was
the point
best
of this podcast
team,
is to enjoy life
Pedro
for a
Morales
second.
Kind of stopped playing midway through the season, yep. But they were, I don't know, they were deadly on set pieces. They were great on the break. And then they were, honestly, it looked like they were about to beat, like, they were outplaying Portland, and then Kakuta Mane got hurt. If Mane hadn't gotten hurt in that series, I think that series goes in a different direction. Whether they could have built on that, I don't know. But the fact that they finished second in the West, they won the Canadian Championship, and they looked good in the playoffs until an unfortunate injury, I don't think there's any discussion. It's got to be that 2015 side.
Yeah, I'm in agreement.
I like it.
Kalen?
I like it. I'm with you.
All right, so we're locked in. 2015 Vancouver Whitecaps going
Lava
into the,
on the
all-time
list of
greats.
Potential Mount Rushmore.
I mean,
he was
this is
really
an exciting
good
moment
for
Vancouver. He was really
years?
Good for them. But for
four
as
years?
Everyone you have this conversation with, for how long? For a year and a half, 2 years?
If is that... Is there anybody on the current roster other than Tybert? I know we mentioned that you think could play a role for them going forward, like
Cavallini,
become a club legend.
Maybe
like
Max.
You'd hope if we have this conversation in 2025,
maybe one of their center backs, Derek Cornelius, has a lot of talent and he's a young kid, so he could get better. Yeah. They just signed Dahomey. Maybe Dahomey's the guy. I love their draft pick, Ryan Raposo, and he's a Canadian kid too, so you like that, David. But Raposo really impresses me. So the hope is that they have just acquired a raft of new guys who will make this conversation difficult, but in a better way
to all be Mount Rushmore
now, instead of difficult in kind of a sad and depressing way as it was here.
Oh, last little piece to add to Kalen's argument for J. DeMeritt was they had an incredible shutout streak when DeMeritt was actually healthy, which Joe Cannon was a part of. I actually had forgotten Joe Cannon even played on that team. And then we got to close out on getting our draw for the next show, because we'll be doing two more
number
teams.
Two.
So, Kalen, I thought we'd go Kalen. On this one, we go Kalen heavy. So I've got up here your MLSsoccer.com stat sheet. And I was thinking I'll go with games started and games played in 2006, your first year with the Fire. Is that cool?
Wait, what are we doing right now?
I'm just going to pick off the randomized list of teams. Each one has a number next to them. Okay. I was going to go based off your 2006 MLS stats, 3 starts and 22 appearances. Is that good?
Lot of burn off the bench.
A lot of burn off the bench. Good production, though. So on our list, number three is How Perfect, San Jose. And number 22 is Columbus Crew. So two classics, two OGs for the 25th anniversary on Monday. We are hoping to have some special guests as well. We'll see how that goes. Does everyone feel good about today's show? Or are people frustrated with the way the votes have gone?
I mean,
besides
I feel,
Andrew, who's dropped out because he has
pretty
no good.
I'm more interested in Atlanta and Vancouver in the middle of the 2020s than I am now, because like so many things are going to change. And that's kind of exciting to think about.
Yeah, I would agree with that. And RSL, it was fun too. I went back and rewatched a lot of the CCL games, the Cruz Azul game and the last game as well. So it was fun to relive those great days. And Andrew, we hope for better days for you coming forward, but we don't guarantee them. And all we can do is have people send their thoughts and prayers across on social media to at Andrew Wiebe. Any complaints?
Stay
with
safe.
His internet connection at
Wash
Fold,
your hands.
FOLG on Twitter. That's all for today, everyone. Thanks so much for joining along. Thanks so much for watching. Don't forget, Vancouver fans, go vote and wash your hands, cough into your crook. All the good things. Stay as far away from Doyle as you can. 6 feet minimum. 2 meters, as they would say across the pond. All right, everybody. Thanks so much for watching. Have a great weekend.